Hello and welcome to edition number 2112 of the Whitney Talking News, which we are recording in the High Street Methodist Church in Whitney on Thursday, the 11th of June, 2026. I am Melissa Ellis and I have edited this edition. This is the first time that I have taken on the role as editor, so please forgive any mistakes and keep your fingers crossed for a smooth recording. We have stories about planning, transport, and of course, no edition would be complete without our old favourites, Jeremy Clarkson and Blenheim Palace. Our readers today are Alan Revell, Jill Breakspear, Mick Walsh, and Dorothy Allen. At the recording controls is our technical wizard, Rob Oxpring. So let's begin with our first story from Alan.
Yes, the headline is Hospital Staff Will Go on Strike Again. And it reads, Oxford University Hospitals have urged people in Oxfordshire to choose services appropriately ahead of upcoming strikes. Resident doctors, who were formerly known as junior doctors, are set to take industrial action from 7 a.m. on Monday, June the 15th, to 7 p.m. on Friday, June the 19th. The strikes are expected to cause mass disruption in hospitals across the UK, and patients are urged to access medical care only when essential. The strikes, following on from industrial action in April, form part of an ongoing dispute between resident doctors and the government. Despite receiving pay rises worth 33% over the past 4 years, the union argues that doctors are still being paid a fifth less than they were in 2008, once inflation is taken into account. Additionally, the strikes form a call to action over the lack of training posts available for new medical graduates. Resident doctors make up nearly half of all doctors in England and work across the NHS, including in A&E and GP surgeries. In a statement, Oxford University Hospitals said, although we will continue to provide urgent and emergency care wherever possible, we will have to reschedule some appointments and elective inpatient and day case procedures across our 4 hospitals in Oxford and Banbury to ensure that we keep our patients who are currently in hospital safe. Disruption is expected to impact patient appointments and waiting times, including days before and after strike action. Felicity Taylor-Drew, Chief Operating Officer at OUH, which is Oxford University Hospitals, said, as always, our top priority during this planned industrial action is ensuring patient safety while maintaining the highest standard of care. We are committed to keeping disruption to a minimum, and we have measures in place to ensure the safety and welfare of our patients and our staff. However, with industrial action reducing the number of resident doctors we have working in our hospitals, there will inevitably be a knock-on effect. Patients may experience longer waiting times, particularly in our 2 emergency departments at the John Radcliffe and the Horton General Hospital. We will prioritise patients who are in genuine need of emergency care. It is important that that patients requiring urgent medical care continue to seek help as usual, especially in emergencies and life-threatening situations.
And here's Jill with a story which is quite heartbreaking.
Yes, definitely a sad story. The headlines are, Woman died after fall from coach when doors opened. An elderly woman from Whitney died after falling 6 feet from a coach when the doors she was leaning against were opened without warning. Patricia Hazel, 82, died in the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford on May the 25th last year, after falling from a coach at Broadway Rail Station in Gloucestershire the month prior. An inquest into her death, heard by a jury at Oxfordshire Coroner's Court on May the 18th this year, found the cause of her death was an accident, but led the coroner to raise concerns about passenger safety with the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency. The court heard Mrs. Hazel had been sitting in the seat behind the allotted wheelchair space, and when the coach pulled into the station, the driver disembarked and passengers followed suit. She stood by her seat with her hand on the window to steady herself. Without realising, the window was the wheelchair access door for the coach, which was opened from the outside without warning. Mrs. Hazel fell 6 feet from the door of the coach and suffered serious injuries, which reduced her mobility and left her in significant pain. Confined to a hospital bed with rib and spinal fractures, she later contracted a chest infection from which she died. Her family have since expressed concerns about the possible dangers of coaches fitted with disabled access doors without their potential risks for passengers being fully assessed. The jury's conclusion read, Mrs. Hazel fell from a coach when the wheelchair access door she was leaning against was opened from the outside without warning or checks being undertaken. The significant injuries Mrs. Hazel sustained led to decreased mobility and a fatal chest infection, which caused her death on May the 25th, 2025, at the John Ratcliffe Hospital, Oxford. Her medical cause of death was given as bilateral bronchopneumonia and hypersensitive heart disease and rib and spinal fractures following a fall. Area coroner Nicholas Graham has written a prevention of future deaths report to the DVSA regarding the safety of disabled access doors on coaches. It addressed the risk of passengers falling from a stationary vehicle when a disabled access door is opened without warnings or checks. The coach firm took steps within its control to prevent a repeat of what happened, the court heard, but evidence established that changes to the design and safety of doors are matters for the DVSA. Mr. Graham wrote, "In my opinion, unless the risk is reviewed and addressed at a regulatory and design level, there remains a risk of future deaths." His concerns included the way access doors could be opened from the outside and not entirely effective safeguards to warn passengers. The agency has until July the 14th to respond to the coroner's report, setting out steps it has taken or will take to mitigate the risk of future injuries or death.
And here's Mick with a story about Thames Water.
Yeah, the headlines says the petition on Thames Water is gathering momentum. A petition to bring Thames Water into public ownership has garnered more than 100,000 signatures. The company remains at the centre of a major environmental controversy following revelations of increased sewage discharges into rivers and waterways across southern England. The issue has intensified public concern over pollution, infrastructure management, and the financial practices of the UK's largest water company. In March 2025, company data revealed that untreated sewage was discharged into waterways for nearly 300,000 hours during 2024, an increase of approximately 50% on the previous year. Environmental groups warned that the releases threatened wildlife, damaged river ecosystems, and affected recreational water users. Regulators responded with a series of investigations into Thames Water's wastewater operations. In May 2025, Ofwat imposed a record £104.5 million penalty for failures in managing sewage infrastructure, alongside an additional £18.2 million fine linked to dividend payments. The combined penalties totaled about £123 million. Critics argue that years of underinvestment and ageing infrastructure contributed to the pollution incidents, while the company accumulated significant debt and continued making payments to investors. Rising customer bills have further fuelled public anger. Thames Water has acknowledged the need for major improvements and says it is investing in upgrades to reduce future sewage discharges. However, regulatory investigations and environmental concerns continue into 2026. The petition aims to gather 200,000 signatures from those affected. The campaign, launched on the online petition platform 38 Degrees, is asking Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds to bring Thames Water into public ownership. The petition reads, "Thames Water could be let off the hook again. Right now, a deal is being discussed that could allow the company to avoid new fines for years, even after sewage spills, leaks and repeated failures. We've seen this pattern before. Deals made behind closed doors, promises of improvement, but no real accountability. Meanwhile, the company is drowning in debt and on the brink of collapse, and customers are being hit with rising bills. If this deal goes ahead, it sets a dangerous precedent that failing water companies can continue dumping sewage and avoid the consequences. Enough is enough. The government has the power to step in but keeps delaying. That's why we're calling on the Environment Secretary to bring Thames Water into public ownership now, to protect the public, clean up our waterways and deliver real lasting change. Thames Water is privately owned by Kemble Water Holdings Limited, which is controlled by a group of institutional investors, including pension funds and sovereign wealth funds."
And Dorothy has two shorter articles.
And the first one is, "Police officer faces misconduct hearing." An Oxford police officer facing a misconduct hearing has been accused of making inappropriate and sexualised comments to a female colleague. PC Lewis Sim of Cowley Police Station will appear before former Chief Constable Melanie Dales at Thames Valley Police Headquarters in Kidlington. The public hearing is scheduled to last for 5 days and will commence at 10 a.m. on Monday, June the 15th. It is alleged that PC Sim has breached the standards of professional behaviour, authority, respect and courtesy, equality and diversity, orders and instructions, and discreditable conduct. The second article is headed, "Manhunt Launch Amid Fraud Probe." A manhunt has been launched amid a theft and fraud probe. Thames Valley Police has said it is searching for Andrew Silver, a 43-year-old who is wanted in connection with fraud and theft offences in Whitney. A spokesperson said, "Thames Valley Police is appealing for the public's help to locate a wanted man from Whitney. Andrew Silver, age 43, is wanted in connection with theft and fraud offences in Whitney on 21st of April this year. Silver is described as white, a slim build, approximately 6 foot tall, with a slight beard, and typically wears a black jacket. He is known to frequent Whitney. If you see Andrew, call 999. If you have information as to his whereabouts, then please call 101 or report via our website, quoting reference 432 601 93473.
We're pleased to welcome Canon Charles Chadwick to give us something to think about with a reflection.
Delightfully, across the news, we very often hear of a new treatment for a disease or debilitating condition. Just this week, the NHS has announced what they term to be key prostate cancer treatments, including breakthrough immunotherapy drugs, take-at-home combination therapies, and robotic-assisted surgeries designed to minimise side effects. In the troubled and disturbing times that we are currently living through, such good news should rightly elicit thankfulness and also provide a positive antidote to the doom and gloom that can all too easily take over. I think that along with human creativity and human potential, we do well to ponder human imagination. For it's one of the key things that makes us unique amongst all life on Earth. It seems that we alone can picture a future different from the present. For people of faith, imagination is a gift from God. As the late Lord Jonathan Sacks once observed, we can do more than react to stimuli. We can contemplate alternatives and choose between them. We can imagine and act on the basis of our imagination. We have freedom in a way no other life form has. There are several ways in which we might not only develop, but also use our imaginations. Firstly, we need not to be bound by the past, which can be well seen in the somewhat unhelpful approach of, well, we've always done it like that. To give one example from history, Dr. Thomas Sydenham, who lived from 1624 to 1629, took a simple but revolutionary new approach to medicine, for he was the first doctor to insist upon the accurate clinical observation of disease, accompanied in its diagnosis by as many drawings and diagrams as possible. Secondly, if you and I are busy all the time, it's highly unlikely that we'll be in touch with our imaginations. Simply by sitting quietly for a few minutes every day, which is not only good for our spiritual and mental well-being, who knows what thoughts might crop up? Of course, they won't all be deeply imaginative or creative, but sometimes they just might. Finally, to imagine other people in their own conditions and situations can make us respond. If we can imagine someone living an isolated life, possibly even someone we know, how might we make contact with them? If we can imagine people starving in, say, the Sudans, how might we support them? Human imagination is a divine gift and attribute to be given time to, and it has the potential to both enhance our lives, those we come into contact with, and indeed the whole world.
And thank you so much for that. The next articles all relate to planning and transport.
And the first of them is headlined, Plans for 75 New Homes on Former Football Club Site. People are being invited to have their say on plans for a new 75-home development on land at Kerbridge Business Park. In 2022, planning permission was granted to Crest Nicholson Operations following a successful appeal. A consultation process is now taking place for locals to have their say on the plans. Councillor Liam McKenzie for Ducklington said in a statement, I would encourage residents to read the plans and add any comments before June the 16th. I have additional concerns granting the same developers permission to build new houses when they still haven't completed parts of Phase 1 of Colwell Green. West Oxfordshire District Council initially refused permission in March 2022 because the initial permission for the whole development granted in 2017 included an area which would have had an employment use and was meant to include a hotel and office space. The housing development will only have one access point in Whitney for cars at the end of Millett Way and another for pedestrians and cyclists at the end of Rye Crescent. The plans consist of 23 three-bedroom homes, 19 four-bedroom houses and 3 five-bedroom houses. The developer has also said that 19 houses would be what it described as affordable to rent, 8 houses would be for first-time buyers, and 3 would be for shared ownership. The developer has also assured that a new play park would be built at the southeast side of the development. Mr. McKenzie also raised concerns that there would only be space for 15 visitor parking spaces after construction of the houses is done. The application seeks approval of the design, layout, landscaping, scale and access arrangements for the residential scheme on land southwest of Downs Road. The planning application, detailed application, covers the finer points of how the development would be delivered, including the appearance of the homes, the road layout, public spaces and landscaping. The plans are under consideration with residents and stakeholders invited to comment before a decision is made by the council. If approved, the development would add 75 homes to the area as part of ongoing housing growth on the western edge of Whitney and Kerbridge. The application was received by the council and validated on Monday, May 18th. The development was originally refused by West Oxfordshire District Council's Planning Committee in 2022. However, the proposal was subsequently allowed on appeal in May 2023, enabling the scheme to proceed to the detailed design stage, which it's at now. Under the plans, Crest Nicholson will add more homes to the 257 already permitted at Colwell Green, a site that used to be home to the now defunct Whitney Town Football Club, and it has two industrial units backing onto it.
And the second of the planning articles is headed 200 Home Development Planned for Farmland Area. A 200-home development on Oxfordshire farmland has been proposed amid concern it could completely alter the character of the area. Developers Max Strategic Land Limited have applied to West Oxfordshire District Council seeking permission for houses and a shop on 11.78 hectares of land near Stanlake, just outside Whitney. The parish of Stanlake, which also includes Brighthampton Village, has a population of less than 1,600 people. Ahead of planning application submission, developers requested feedback on plans from residents which it referenced in its proposals. Statements included: it will completely alter the pleasant character of the existing village and Stanlake will lose its village status. The plan said, the overriding vision for the site is to create a high-quality, landscape-led place that integrates with the existing landscape and context of Stanlake to deliver a sustainable addition to the village for up to 200 dwellings, in addition to a small local convenience store. Previously, in 2018, a 100-home development was refused for the site amid sustainability concerns and fears about increased car use. Recent feedback included fear for safety issues and increased traffic at A Road junctions, creating particular risks near the primary school. Further concerns were raised over the loss of green space and impact on wildlife and birds. The plan said sewage, drainage and flooding were the most commonly mentioned concerns throughout the feedback received. Most respondents highlighted concerns about the capacity of local sewage infrastructure and the impact of the development on local flooding. Many expressed existing issues with Thames Water and that they'd like to see improvements to this infrastructure before any development takes place. This comes amid reports of tankers regularly being deployed to pump excess water from wastewater for disposal during periods of heavy rainfall. The planned development would partly overlook a lake and is close to the River Windrush. A resident said, the proposed location is regularly flooded in periods of heavy rain and additional building will be likely to be detrimental to the existing inadequate water courses and add to the flood risk for the proposed development and other Stanlake properties throughout the village. The proposals say the development location is not likely to flood. Describing the planned homes, it said, the proposal can provide a variety of housing types and tenures, which increases local housing choice and need within the area. The convenience store is proposed near the southern access point on the Downs, providing community facilities to new and existing residents. It adds, the scheme also proposes a high-quality network of green spaces, including soft and native landscaping, areas of wildflower planting and attenuation features.
Well, possibly some good news on potholes. The headline is, resurfacing begins to fix 85,000 square metres of carriageway. Oxfordshire County Council has begun a five-month resurfacing programme to upgrade more than 85,000 square metres of carriageway across the county. The work follows a winter which saw what the council describes as an unprecedented rise in pothole reports, both nationally and in Oxfordshire, putting extra pressure on its 4,500-kilometre road network. While it accepts reactive repairs are still essential, especially where defects pose an immediate danger, the council says its focus is shifting towards longer-term, more cost-effective maintenance. The current programme includes an £8 million surface dressing scheme expected to improve around 1 million square feet of carriageway, with further projects planned later in the summer. The council said it is using specialist repair teams, dragon patcher spray injection machines and bobcat patching equipment to tackle damaged sections and prepare roads for these treatments. Work has already started on its inlay resurfacing programme, running until October, in 33 roads covering more than 85,000 square metres of carriageway. This deeper resurfacing removes worn-out layers of tarmac before laying a new surface, offering a more durable fix than patching individual potholes. English councils risk losing up to a third of their funding to fix potholes if they fail to demonstrate they are working effectively. Some £525 million of £1.6 billion funding for local road maintenance in 2026-27 will be held back unless councils can prove they are spending the money wisely. Renewed focus on county roads comes as Oxford firm 001 Taxis told the Oxford Mail it is spending more than £240,000 a year on wear and tear repairs blamed on potholes, saying the state of roads is leaving its business struggling. Since January, the County Council has increased the number of pothole repair crews from 7 to up to 25 to try to cut the backlog. It says its aim to repair potholes within 2 hours, 24 hours or 28 days, depending on size, location and risk. But some 28-day jobs have slipped due to the surge in reports. In 2025-26, the council said it spent £69 million on highway maintenance and repaired 37,000 potholes and carriageway defects, with the budget to rise to £73 million this year. Over the same period, it received 4,095 claims for pothole-related damage and settled about 25%, paying out more than £275,000 in compensation. The council says those figures relate to when claims were logged or settled, not necessarily when the incidents took place.
And heading for this article is A40 upgrade works finally set to begin. Long-delayed works to connect an unused park and ride with a main road are set to begin later this month as a £70 million building contract is green-lit. A 4.5-mile stretch of the A40 connecting Ensham Park and Ride to Wolvercote and widening the road with new bus lanes, shared pedestrian cycle lanes and crossings are set to be built, following the signing of a deal with builders Balfour Beatty. On Monday, June the 1st, former council leader, now highways repair boss, Liz Leffman, gave permission for a contract signing, saying, "This has been a long time in the making." The decision comes after a council report warned further delays to the scheme will result in the project costs exceeding the approved budget. The current projected costs are dependent on the works beginning in mid-June. At the meeting, Ms. Leffman asked if there are funds for any extra costs that may be incurred beyond the £70 million planned for the scheme. Council officers said both the budget budgeted and contingency funds are in place. They also explained the plan is intended to reduce journey times, and Ms. Leffman stated she hopes the scheme will enhance journeys for people using the A40. There have been significant delays to the scheme, which started in 2022, only to be halted because of funding issues. This has left the 19-acre Ensham Park and Ride sitting idle since its completion in January 2024, costing around £10,000 a month in maintenance and security. In recent months, the road scheme was held up due to a planning request for environmental information, which the report says had a knock-on effect on the government's approval process and timing. Last week, Dan Levy, Cabinet Member for Finance, said the unused park and ride facility had been embarrassing for the council, but it had been the most cost-effective and efficient way to do things. The authority stated the park and ride was completed on time and to budget because of a separate ring-fenced grant, and if it had been delayed with the roadworks, it would have been hit by inflation. Mr. Levy stated, "It's taken a lot of work to make sure that the scheme that will get approved next week will be one that fits the finance envelope and meets the Environment Agency's demands for that stretch of road, but it will finally happen." The completion of this scheme will mark the end of a wider A40 project aimed at improving transport connections, promoting sustainable travel such as cycling, and reducing emissions.
And our next headline is calls for new 40-mile-an-hour speed limits on Village Road. Consultations are open for a proposed 40-mile-per-hour speed limit between two Oxfordshire villages. Oxfordshire County Council is asking for comments on a suggested 40-mile-an-hour speed limit between Longhambra and Bladon. What it doesn't say in the story is that the current speed limit is 50 miles an hour. The proposals for the A4095 have been put forward to help improve road safety on local roads and are supported by Bladon and Hambra councillors. Speed surveys taken by the council have shown that 40 miles an hour is more appropriate for the road. The 4095 main road was the site of a serious crash last June, with emergency services in attendance at the time. The proposals form part of a wider Vision Zero road speed limit review. The council has confirmed further consultations on speed limit amendments, including for other sections of the A4095, but no further amendments are proposed for the road between Bladon and Whitney at this time. The consultation will run until Friday, July 3, with anyone open to complete the survey in this time. Cabinet approved funding of up to £8 million to deliver 20-mile-an-hour limits across the county, meaning implementing schemes came at no cost to town or parish councils. That started in February 2022. Now, the number of people killed or seriously injured on Oxfordshire roads in 2025 fell by 18% to 213, according to data by the Department of Transport. In comparison, outside of the Oxfordshire area, in the Thames Valley Police area, such accidents rose by 20% in the same year. And across Great Britain, such accidents rose by 4%. Oxfordshire County Council leader Tim Bearder said, "While these figures are still provisional, the early signs are extremely encouraging. Oxfordshire appears to be bucking the wider Thames Valley trend, with serious and fatal casualties falling significantly at a time when neighbouring areas are seeing increases. That strongly suggests the approach we have taken in Oxfordshire is working. We have made a conscious decision as a county to take speed seriously because lower speeds save lives. They reduce the severity of injuries and they make our communities safe and healthier places to live. Councillor Gareth Epps, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Minister for Transport Management, said the reduction of people killed or seriously injured on Oxfordshire roads is hugely important. Remember, behind every statistic is a real person, a family and a community affected by such road collisions.
Date set for the launch of £1.3 billion East-West Rail Line. A date has been set for the long-awaited £1.3 billion East-West Rail Line from Oxford. The government says trains from Oxford to Milton Keynes are being lined up to appear in the December rail timetable. In a written statement, Rail Minister Lord Peter Hendy said, Chiltern worked with Network Rail, the Department for Transport and other operators on the December 2026 timetable, and services have been timetabled between Oxford, Winslow, Bletchley and Milton Keynes. The department continues to work closely with Chiltern Railways and other partners to confirm a start date for the first east-west rail services between Oxford and Milton Keynes Central via Winslow. A public consultation on the east-west rail project is due to close on Tuesday this week as work continues behind the scenes to bring passenger services closer to reality. The start of the services has been delayed by a dispute with rail unions about whether guards should be required for the new services. The consultation invites residents, businesses and stakeholders to share their views on the next phase of the scheme, which aims to improve connectivity from Oxford to Cambridge through Bicester Village, Aylesbury and Milton Keynes. East West Railway Company confirmed that infrastructure for the section between Bicester and Bletchley was handed over to Network Rail in December 2024, following the completion of construction. Chiltern Railways, which was named as the operator of the first stage between Oxford and Milton Keynes in March 2025, said significant progress has already been made in preparing for the launch. This includes recruiting 44 trainee drivers, completing a new depot and colleague hub at Bletchley, and advancing work at Winslow Station, which is now in its testing and commissioning phase. We continue to work closely with the government, trade unions and industry partners, and will provide further updates when we are able to, a spokesperson said. Millions of pounds of funding has been allocated to create a new entrance at a railway station on the East-West Rail route, which will eventually link Oxford and Cambridge. The government has put forward £17 million to support construction of an eastern entrance to Bletchley Station, on top of a commitment of up to £5 million from Milton Keynes City Council in Buckinghamshire. It will create a direct gateway between the station and Bletchley's main high street, improving access for passengers and supporting businesses.
And here we have this week's notice board. There are no known listeners' birthdays this week. And the following deaths were reported in the Whitney Gazette and the Oxford Mail. All occurred in May. David John Pedder, on 1st of May, aged 80. Sylvia Morris, on 3rd of May, aged 81. Mandy Bloomfield, on the 14th of May, aged 67. Eric William Manning, on the 14th of May, aged 94. Linda Godfrey, on the 18th of May, aged 70. David Peter Messer, on the 19th of May, aged 83. Alan Tibbetts, on the 25th of May, aged 84. Mary Munger, on the 28th of May, aged 95. And May Joyce Bowerman, no date given, aged 96. We offer our sincere condolences to their friends and family at this time. Right, moving on, it's time to tickle the little grey cells. We now have the answers to last week's quiz. And I'm sure our readers would like to join in with shouting out the answers. So, question one. The final movement of suite number 5 in E major is known as the Harmonious Blacksmith. Who is the composer?
No idea.
It was George Frideric Handel. And the bonus question, for which instrument was it composed?
Piano?
Close. The harpsichord. Yeah. Question two. Where in the human body is a bone called the incus or anvil?
In the ear.
Good shout. Question three. By which ancient trackway would you find Wayland Smithy?
Fosway?
It's the Ridgeway. Wayland Smithy is on the Ridgeway, about a mile away from the Uffington White Horse.
Yeah.
Question four. What is the word used for a person who specialises in equine foot care, including shoeing?
Blacksmith.
No.
It's a farrier.
Oh, yes.
So the farrier treats the foot and makes the shoes, whereas a blacksmith would just make the shoes. Yeah. Question five. Which Roman deity is the god of fire and blacksmiths?
Give us a clue.
It begins with a V.
Give us another clue.
I'll give you the answer. Is Vulcan, known as the blacksmith of the gods, and he forged legendary weapons and used a forge hidden in the depths of Mount Etna. So we'll move on to this week's quiz. And our readers will not be shouting out the answers. They can write them down. Question one. What breed of dog is Snoopy? The pet dog of Charlie Brown in the Peanuts comic strip. Question two. Marathons, swimming the channel, round the world yacht races, and the Le Mans 24-hour race are what type of event beginning with the letter E? Question three. Which US state is bordered by New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, and California? I'll give you a clue. Phoenix is its capital. Question four. Which capital city stands on the banks of the River Lagan and is famous for being the location of the shipyard where the Titanic was built? Question five. Henry VIII had two sisters who both became queens. His elder sister Margaret became the Queen of Scotland, and his younger sister, for a short time, became the Queen of France. What is his younger sister's name? And a bonus question. Each of the answers that you have has got a common link. What is the link? I shall start my monologue with a quote from the 1959 Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, The Sound of Music. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with string, these are a few of my favourite things. Well, this might sound a bit morbid, but I often wonder what people will remember about me when I'm no longer here that will make them smile. My grandparents died when I was quite young, and I often think of them when I think about their favourite things. For example, dahlias, hazelnuts picked from the hedge, fundraising for the lifeboats, and playing darts. I recall happy memories when I think of these things, and I wonder, what are your favourite things? One of my particular favourite things is chocolate cake. And I would like to share a poem about it, written by Michael Rosen. It is printed in his book titled Quick, Let's Get Out of Here, that was published in 1983. So here's his poem, Chocolate Cake. I love chocolate cake, and when I was a boy, I loved it even more. Sometimes we used to have it for tea, and Mum used to say, "If there's any left over, you can have it to take to school tomorrow to have at playtime." And the next day, I would take it to school, wrapped up in tinfoil, open it up at playtime, and sit in the corner of the playground, eating it. You know how the icing on the top is all shiny, and it cracks as you bite into it. And then there's that other kind of icing in the middle, and it sticks to your hands, and you can lick your fingers and lick your lips. Oh, it's lovely. Yeah. Anyway, once we had this chocolate cake for tea, and later I went to bed. But while I was in bed, I found myself waking up, licking my lips, and smiling. I woke up proper. The chocolate cake. It was the first thing I thought of. I could almost see it. So I thought, what if I go downstairs and have a little nibble? Yeah. It was all dark. Everyone was in bed, so it must have been really late. But I got out of bed, crept out of the door. There's always that creaky floorboard, isn't there? Past Mum and Dad's room, careful not to tread on bits of broken toys or bits of Lego. You know what it's like treading on Lego with your bare feet. Yow! Shh! Downstairs into the kitchen, open the cupboard, and there it is, all shining. So I take it out of the cupboard and put it on the table, and I see that there's a few crumbs lying on the plate. So I lick my finger and run my finger over all the crumbs, scooping them up and put them into my mouth. Mmm. Nice. Then I look again, and on one side where it's been cut, it's all crumbly. So I take a knife and I think, I'll just tidy that up a bit. Cut off the crumbly bits, scoop them all up and into the mouth. Mmm, nice. Look at the cake again. That looks a bit funny now. The other side doesn't match the other. I'll just even it up a bit, eh? Take the knife and slice. This time the knife makes a little cracky noise as it goes through that hard icing on the top. A whole slice this time. Into the mouth. Oh, the icing on the top and the icing in the middle. Ooh, mmm. But now I can't stop myself. Knife. I just take any old slice at it and I've got this great big chunk and I'm cramming it in. What a greedy pig. But it's so nice. And there's another and another and I'm squealing and I'm smacking my lips and I'm stuffing myself with it. And before I know, I've eaten the whole lot. I look at the plate. It's all gone. Oh no, they're bound to notice, aren't they? A whole chocolate cake just doesn't disappear, does it? What shall I do? I know, I'll wash the plate up and the knife and put them away. And maybe no one will notice. So I do that and creep, creep, creep back to bed, into bed, doze off, licking my lips, with a lovely feeling in my belly. Mmm. In the morning, I get up, downstairs, have breakfast. Mum saying, "Have you got your dinner money?" And I say, "Yes. And don't forget to take some chocolate cake with you." I stopped breathing. "What's the matter?" she says. "You normally jump at chocolate cake." I'm still not breathing. And she's looking at me very closely now. She's looking at me just below my mouth. "What's that?" she says. "What's what?" I say. "What's that there?" "Where?" "There," she says, pointing at my chin. "I don't know," I say. "It looks like chocolate," she says. "It's not chocolate, is it?" No answer. "Is it?" "I don't know." She goes to the cupboard, looks in, up, top, middle, bottom, turns back to me. "It's gone. It's gone. You haven't eaten it, have you?" "I don't know." "You don't know? You don't know if you've eaten a whole chocolate cake or not? When? When did you eat it?" So I told her. And she said, well, what could she say? "That's the last time I give you any cake to take to school. Now go, get out. No, wait. Not before you've washed your dirty, sticky face." I went upstairs and looked in the mirror. There it was, just below my mouth. A chocolate smudge. The giveaway. Maybe she'll forget about it by next week. And now we move on with some more light-hearted news stories.
The title of this article is Palace Event with Huge Dinosaur Sculptures. Blenheim Palace will soon welcome visitors to a new immersive experience on dinosaurs. The palace will host Dinosaurs Are Forever, an outdoor exhibition running from August the 11th to November the 1st, featuring full-scale dinosaur sculptures by artist J.J. Burridge. At the heart of the exhibition are five monumental sculptures of Megalosaurus, the first dinosaur ever to be scientifically named. Heather Carter, Visitor Attraction Managing Director at Blenheim Palace, said, "We're so excited to bring our visitors a brand new experience this summer, and it's a real first for Blenheim Palace. It's a subject that appeals to all ages and interests, and not many people know about the first ever named dinosaur being discovered here. Dinosaurs Are Forever shines a light on the fascinating discovery of these prehistoric creatures right on our doorstep. JJ is massively talented. The scale and vibrancy of these sculptures is going to really stand out against the backdrop of Blenheim Palace, so this outdoor exhibition is one not to be missed. Located in the grounds of the palace, the exhibition will showcase five reimagined Megalosaurus skeletons, discovered 2 centuries ago in Stonesfield, a village near the palace. The sculptures blend traditional craftsmanship with modern technology and are created using methods found in the motorsport engineering and aerospace industries. Mr. Burridge, a British artist and former BBC presenter, rose to fame creating large-scale toy-inspired sculptures and later hosted the children's art show SM Art. His creative portfolio spans art, design, publishing and television, including a collaboration with Jamie Oliver and a solo exhibition in Beverly Hills with the Lasarides Gallery. He's also authored the 6-book adventure series, The World of Supersaurs. His dinosaur sculptures draw on decades of artistic exploration, blending storytelling with immersive art. Mr. Burridge said, "Until now, these dinosaurs existed only in my imagination. These sculptures connect the birthplace of dinosaurs with the technologies shaping our future. If Megalosaurus began our understanding of ancient life, the sculptures imagine what the modern world might go next, where the modern world might go next. This project takes the first dinosaur and rebuilds it through the lens of modern engineering, asking not what dinosaurs were, but what they could become." The exhibition is a partnership with Future Fossils and the Museum of Natural History at the University of Oxford, where Megalosaurus fossils are on display. Entry to Dinosaurs Are Forever will be included with all valid Blenheim Palace tickets, including Park and Gardens Day Ticket, Palace Park and Gardens Pass, and the Palace and Play Annual Pass. The show marks Mr. Burridge's most ambitious project to date, combining artistic vision with advanced materials and technology to reimagine prehistoric life in a contemporary context. And there's a photograph of the exhibition with the big dinosaur footprints outside the palace.
I've got 2 short articles here. The first one's headlined, "Red Arrows Fly for the King." And it says that flight restrictions have been revealed as the Red Arrows are set for the birthday of King Charles. A number of sky measures, as they're called, are being put in place for the King's birthday flypast on Saturday, the 13th of June. The traditional event sees a number of aircraft, including the Red Arrows, Chinook helicopters and historic planes, flying over Buckingham Palace and out into the countryside as the royal family watches on from the building's famous balcony. This year, it will impose restrictions in the vicinity of the North Sea, East Anglia, Essex and London, with a dispersal to the western north of the capital over Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and here in Oxfordshire. Second piece is headed Town Council Wins Award. Whitney Town Council has been awarded for its high standards and its commitment to the community. The council has earned the Silver Level Award from the National Association of Local Councils through its Local Council Award Scheme. It's an award that recognises exemplary governance, transparency, financial management and community engagement. Ruth Smith, leader of Whitney Town Council, said, "I'm immensely proud the Town Council has attained the Silver Award, which recognises its high standards in the parish and town council sector. This achievement reflects the dedication and professionalism and expertise of staff in supporting the work and priorities of the council for the benefit of the people of Whitney." The Local Council Award Scheme is peer assessed and highlights councils demonstrating best practice, effective service delivery, and a commitment to improvement.
Over 100 attend First Brass on the Grass. Over 100 people enjoyed a free Oxfordshire Brass on the Grass show. The concert from Whitney Town Band was held on Sunday, June the 7th, from 2:30 till 4:30 at the Wood Green Park. Afterwards, the group thanked local people for turning out for the first in its Brass on the Grass series. On social media, a spokesperson said, "We think we had an audience of over 100 by the end. Thank you so much for coming out, and we very much hope you enjoyed our performance." The band's next concerts will be on Sunday, July the 5th, at Oxlease by Cogs Farm from 2:30 to 4:30, and on Sunday, August the 2nd, at the Lees. The amateur group is made up of brass musicians who practice every week and perform at events throughout Oxfordshire. And there's a lovely photo showing members of the Whitney Town Band playing to a crowd of happy-looking people, clearly enjoying the music.
Two short stories. First one, takeaway favourite closing after 20 years. A Chinese takeaway is shutting up shop for the last time after two decades serving Carterton. New Dragon House in Blackbolton Road blamed an economic downturn on the demise. Its final day will be Saturday, June the 20th. A statement from the business owners on Monday morning said, "It's with great sadness that I write to inform you that after 20 years of trading, our business will be closing. Our final day of trading will be Saturday, June the 20th. Unfortunately, the recent economic downturn has made it increasingly difficult for us to continue operating. Serving the Carterton community and the surrounding areas has been an absolute privilege." And the next one, Creamery proud after award wins. A popular Oxfordshire creamery has said it is proud of the team's work after winning two artisan cheese prizes at an annual awards. Excuse me. Nettlebed Creamery won the top prizes in two categories at the 10th annual Artisan Cheese Awards 2026, a series which supports cheesemakers in the UK and Ireland and celebrates their achievements. This year, the awards saw 644 entries from more than 100 micro and medium-sized artisan cheese producers and a judging panel of 80 representatives from some of the top food retailers and supermarkets. Across 20 classes, from hard to soft cheese, raw milk to blue, smoked and flavoured, Nettlebed Creamery came away with two gold awards. Their Witheridge in Hay 6-month aged cheese was awarded class winner in the organic class, while its Bix cheese won highly commended in the soft cheese class. Nettlebed Creamery's executive cheesemaker Sabrina Langley said, "It's always really lovely to get recognition for our cheeses. We've got a great team here at the moment. It's hot and tiring work and quite a physical job. So when you get awards coming through, it makes it all worth it.
Line for this article is New Chairman in Great Times Vow. And it's all about Oxford United. The new chairman of Oxford United has promised great times ahead in a new statement to the fans. United recently announced changes to its leadership structure as Grant Ferguson stepped down as chair. Two new names were appointed, with Dusan Bogdanovic announced as Ferguson's replacement and former Inter Milan board member Rudy Laxmana joining the U's board. The Serbian national was most recently CEO of Indonesian club Garudayaksa's foundation and already had a relationship with Yellow's owner Eric Sohier, having been pictured with him in December 2024 alongside FIFA president Gianni Infantino. Now, the new chairman has released a statement addressing the fans amid his takeover of the role at the EFL League One club. "I'm deeply honoured to take on the role of chairman of Oxford United Football Club," Bogdanovic said. "This is a club with history, character and a proud sense of community. Oxford United means a great deal to so many people and I fully understand the responsibility that comes with helping to lead it. It's a genuine privilege to be involved and I approach this role with ambition, humility and a clear determination to help the club succeed and compete at the highest level, both on and off the pitch. I would like to thank my predecessor Grant Ferguson for his dedication and leadership over the past 4 years. Grant has played an important part in one of the most successful periods in the club's recent history, and I look forward to working alongside him and the rest of the board as we continue to dream big and build for the future. I appreciate it has taken some time for me to properly introduce myself. Since taking up the position of chair, my immediate focus has been on understanding the club in detail, reviewing our football structures and transfer plans with Ed Waldron, and ensuring we respond with clarity, unity and purpose following relegation to League One. My vision is simple: to help engineer Oxford United into a club that plays beautiful, brave and effective football, a team with identity, intelligence and ambition. We must be exciting to watch, but also disciplined, resilient and built to win. There is a great deal of work ahead, particularly as we prepare for an important summer and the new season. We are aligned in our ambitions, focused on strengthening intelligently, recruiting well and creating the best possible environment for long-term sporting success. Just as importantly, I am passionate about bringing our supporters and the community even closer to the club. Success on the pitch is powered by the energy, belief and passion of the fans. Oxford United's community is one of its greatest strengths and I want us to deepen that connection, improve engagement and ensure our supporters feel proud of the direction we are taking.
And now the article that Melissa promised at the beginning, one on Jeremy Clarkson. And the headline is Warning to Visitors at Clarkson's Farm This Week. Jeremy Clarkson's Cotswold Farm issued a warning to visitors this week. The 1,000-acre farm, which was bought by the former Top Gear presenter in 2008, has been managed by him since 2019. His efforts, of course, have been documented in the popular Amazon Prime TV series Clarkson's Farm, the fifth series of which aired last week. Or began airing last week. The Chadlington farm, which is named Diddley Squat, also has a farm shop, which attracts thousands of fans each year. And if any of you have been listening closely over the last couple of years, you'll all know that. The farm hosted the cereals event this week, and it meant various road closures around the West Oxfordshire area. The farm shop remained open, And a statement for the shop said, Diddley hosted cereals this week. Cereals is a farming trade event and at the moment at least is not open to the public. There were additional road closures and extra traffic around the farm during this time. The farm shop was still open as usual, but it might have taken people a little longer than normal to get to us. The farmer's dog, our pub, was open as usual with less traffic around that area. Thanks for your understanding, and we're sorry for any inconvenience.
Popular splash park to extend opening hours. A splash park is to extend its opening hours following demand from children and adults. The park at Whitney, which was open between midday and 6, will now be open between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. This is to give people more time in the splash park during cooler hours of late morning, but it could add an extra £2,500 to Whitney Town Council's water bill. Whitney Town Council leader Ruth Smith said, "The decision was made having listened to people's suggestions during the unseasonable heatwave last week. This gives the people who wanted mornings that option, adds to the option to avoid the heat of the day, and only closes 1 hour earlier, around tea time," she said. "We have balanced this decision with consideration of responsible water use and cost. As you know from household bills, water can be expensive. This could add £2,500 to the budgeted £15,000 water bill. We will monitor the usage, the reusage, watering plants, etc., and any savings compared to using mains water for those grey water jobs, and hopefully it won't add that much cost. There was an option to have different hours for hot days versus normal days, but the feeling was that that would be difficult to communicate and to judge." Councillor Rachel Crouch added, "We have all listened to our residents and agreed to open the splash park from 10 a.m. to allow parents of toddlers to enjoy the fun before it gets too hot and they need their lunchtime snooze. And now it's going to rain every day."
Yeah. Right. We know the UK justice system can be slow, but here's a story you couldn't really make up. Prosecutors drop tortoise theft case after criticism. The case of an Oxfordshire woman accused of stealing a tortoise has been dropped by prosecutors. The defendant, Victoria McGuinness of Collett Drive, Bampton, had been charged with the theft of a tortoise named Raff, belonging to Rachel Boyd in Bampton on July the 13th last year. She pleaded not guilty to the offence. The case was before the court again on June the 5th when the prosecution offered no evidence, meaning the case was dropped. Judge Ian Pringle, KC, previously questioned why the case was before the Crown Court at all. In January, he said, "This is the theft of a tortoise. I'm sure a fondly kept pet. But I find it staggering that the Crown Prosecution Service will have the public purse pay for a trial for this. I don't think it would be in the public interest to have a trial when we have the backlog of cases we do. I very, very rarely say things like this. What are we doing having a trial in the Crown Court for the theft of a tortoise?" For Crown Court cases, data published earlier last year showed the open caseload nationally was 78,329 at the end of June, up 2% from 76,957 at the end of March, when the backlog passed 75,000 for the first time. In Oxford, there were 561 open outstanding cases on June the 30th last year, up from 521 at the same time in 2024.
And the title of this article is "Missing Man Says He Is Completely Fine." A missing person appeal in Didcot took a dramatic turn after the man at the centre of the search claimed he is not missing and accused police of harassment. Thames Valley Police issued an alert on Saturday night for 31-year-old Thomas, whose surname was not disclosed, who was last reportedly seen at around 5 p.m. on May the 27th. In an appeal issued publicly on Saturday evening, Thames Valley Police described him as 6'4", slim, with a beard, short brown hair and brown eyes. Police said he was last seen wearing a black T-shirt with black jogging bottoms or shorts. The appeal said he may also be using a white Audi and is known to frequent South Oxfordshire Crematorium and Checkenden Woods. However, in a series of comments responding to the appeal, a man identifying himself as Thomas insisted he is safe and has been in contact with family and friends. He wrote, "I'm not missing, I'm completely fine," and criticised the description released, disputing both his height and clothing, saying, "He is 6'3" and fat, and wearing black jeans and a navy Hugo Boss T-shirt. He also alleged the situation amounted to a waste of taxpayers' money and claimed police had been harassing him at his home address. In further comments, he said, "This is a defamation of character. I'm not missing. I am here." Late on Sunday afternoon, Thames Valley Police confirmed Thomas had been found safe and well.
And the final story for you. Headline is, "Pub is among best for weekend stroll." And it reads, "A village pub near Wantage has been listed among 20 of the nation's favourites for incorporating into a weekend stroll. The list has been created by David Hancock, who's the chief pub inspector for Sawdays. And he's revealed his pick of Britain's best destinations for weekends filled with hiking and food. The list, compiled on behalf of the travel company Sawdays, has the Greyhound Inn in Letcombe Regis as one of its top choices. And it's particularly because it's close to a popular walking route, the Ridgeway, which is an 87-mile national trail. He writes in the article, "Grab a map from the bar and you're straight onto the Ridgeway, Britain's oldest road and one of its finest walks. The chalk downlands roll away towards Uffington White Horse and Wayland's Smithy, with big skies and very little noise. This 18th century village pub does everything right, from stylish bedrooms with wonky floors and a kitchen that takes seasonal ingredients seriously. It's a proper local, not trying too hard, in exactly the right place." And the pub, flattered, said in a statement, "Everyone is very welcome at the Greyhound, an 18th century freehouse right in the centre of Letcombe Regis. It's a pretty downland village within the Vale of the White Horse region. Whatever you're looking for from your visit to the Greyhound, you can be sure that we are dedicated to ensuring you can relax and have a really good time. And the pub has a 4.7 out of 5 rating on customer review site TripAdvisor."
That's all we have time for. Please remove the memory stick from the playback unit and close the metal shield. Remember to reverse the plastic address label on the pouch before posting it back to us. Please do so as soon as possible, as sometimes we run out of pouches. If you'd like to contact us, leave a slip of paper in the pouch and we'll telephone you. If you continue listening after the recording, you'll get the listings for the broadcast programmes. Before we go, there is time for a little joke. So here we are. Two horses were in the yard discussing their recent form. The first horse says rather proudly, "Did you know I have won 3 out of my last 5 races this season? Isn't that good?" And the second horse replies, "Well, I have done rather well too by winning 7 out of my last 10 races. Isn't that quite good?" A greyhound sitting in the corner of the yard perks up and says, "Sorry to interrupt. I heard you talking about your races. Well, I've won all 20 of my last races, and I am the unbeaten champion at the dog track." The horses stare at the greyhound in amazement. The first horse turns to the second and says, "Blimey, that's impressive. A talking dog." It remains for me to thank the Whitney Gazette and the Oxford Mail for the stories we have used tonight. Thanks to our technical expert, Rob Oxbring, at the recording controls. Our copiers, who are Alan Revel and Mick Walsh, who are copying the memory sticks and popping them into the pouches. Thanks to our admin team, Jenny Wiley and Marnie Leach, who have been checking the pouches and the memory sticks that you've returned and keeping our register up to date. And finally, thanks to our four readers, Alan Revel, Jill Breakspear, Mick Walsh and Dorothy Allen. I know everyone would like to say goodbye, and so until next time...
Goodbye.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Here are the radio listings for the 7 days beginning Saturday the 13th of June, compiled by Wendy and read by Gilly. Starting with Saturday 13th of June, an adaptation of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll is read by Alan Bennett on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. Joseph Andrews Remixed is a dramatisation in two parts of Henry Fielding's novel about a good-natured footman and his eccentric friend. Part 1 is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Today's opera is Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier in a Royal Opera House production from 2004 on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. Moving on to Sunday the 14th of June. The Castaway in Desert Island Discs is actor Anna Maxwell Martin on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. While in Desert Island Discs Revisited, the castaway is champion racing jockey Frankie Dettori on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. An estimated 1 million people have had to leave their homes in Lebanon, which has been repeatedly hit by war. In Lebanon's Abandoned Lives, we hear about the realities of life in the country on Radio 4 at 1:30 p.m. The Little Otleys is a period comedy focusing on a web of romantic entanglements in Edwardian London, on Radio 4 Extra at 1:50 and 7:50 p.m. Deja News is a quiz in which teams of contestants are questioned on a century of news archive. It's on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. Words and Music features poetry, prose and music evoking Restoration England, including readings from the diaries of Samuel Pepys and music by Purcell, on Radio 3 at 7:45 p.m. Current Affairs and From Our Own Correspondent is on Radio 4 at 9:30 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which are broadcast at the same time every day from Monday to Friday. 4 Days to Kill is a radio spy thriller by Robert Barr, following the exploits of Captain Jim Nicholson, played by Edward D'Souza, on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday to Friday. The book of the week is Heatwave, The Summer of 1976, John L. Williams's non-fiction book charting the summer of heat, water shortages and cultural upheaval that rocked Britain, on Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. each day this week. Under One Roof is a comedy drama about a mother, daughter and grandmother living together, based on stories by Michelle Hanson. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 8:45 a.m, 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. each day. In the Composer of the Week slot this week, Anonymous celebrates pieces whose authorships have been lost, deliberately obscured, or never recorded in the first place. On Radio 3 at 4 p.m. every day this week. The book at bedtime this week and next is Land by Maggie O'Farrell. Tomás and his son Liam are working to create an ordnance survey map of Ireland in the aftermath of the Great Hunger of 1845 to 52. It's read by Brendan Gleeson on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. Now, some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday the 15th of June. Ella Fitzgerald, A Glorious Noise, is a 2017 programme examining the singer's work. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. In the series Nature Bang, the programme compares the bellowing roars of red deer stags to delve deeper into the psychology of the human voice, asking whether lower voices are taken more seriously. Radio 4 at 2:45 p.m. No doubt with the World Cup in mind, in 60 Years of Hurt, David Baddiel reflects on the collective and individual agonies of the penalty shootout. On Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. For fans of the panel show, there's an episode of Just a Minute on Radio 4 Extra at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. And there's also I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, hosted by Jack D on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Now some suggestions for Tuesday, the 16th of June. The Medal Makers discovers the realities of being a judge at a sporting event with input from Olympic adjudicators on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. Lucy Worsley begins a new series this week, Lady on Trial, exploring the lives of women involved in some of history's most famous and infamous legal battles. She begins with 19th century writer Caroline Norton, who campaigned to change the law on the custody of children, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. In What's Up Docs, Chris and Zan van Tulleken are at the Hay Festival to discuss what can be learnt from different countries and cultures around the world about how to live longer, healthier lives. It's Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. And Radio 3 in Concert brings us a performance by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra of Mahler's Ninth Symphony on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. In Touch brings us news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, presented as usual by Peter White on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. Moving on to Wednesday, 17th of June, in The Good Old Days, The Politics of Nostalgia, the programme delves into the archives to examine how politicians have used our love affair with the past and encouraged the nation that it's possible to reclaim it. On Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The Missing Hancocks brings us a recreation of A Holiday in France, a lost episode from 1955. Modern actors play the roles of Harry Secombe, Bill Kerr and Sid James, but surprisingly, Tony Hancock didn't feature in the original episode. Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And Choral Evensong comes from the Chapel of Clare College, Cambridge, on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert brings us the first of two concerts from Snape Maltings as part of the Aldborough Festival on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. The second concert is tomorrow at the same time. In a new era of multi-party politics, the long view compares attitudes to electoral reform, past and present, on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. Round off the day with music in The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Then on Thursday the 18th of June, in a programme from 2006 in the series Great Lives, Dame Cleo Lane and Ivan Massow explore the career of Ella Fitzgerald on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. In Ramblings this week, Claire Balding meets Marlon Patrice for a walk up the Wrekin in Shropshire on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. A new series of feedback begins this week with a look into the mailbag of listeners' comments on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. Amal Rajan and guests offer their insights into the biggest news stories of the week in Radical on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And so to Friday the 19th of June. The Wheels of Power hears from some of the drivers from the government car service in the Thatcher era who drove ministers around in Rovers, Jags and Daimlers on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. The food programme this week asks the question, why isn't food part of cancer care? On Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Into the Wild, in the series Rare Earth, asks if there is any true wilderness left on our planet and considers the fear and fascination that the wilderness exerts. Radio 4 at 12:04 p.m. In Heart and Soul, Emily Wither speaks to Iranians inside the country about how war, repression and disillusionment have reshaped their relationship with religion on the BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m. Enjoy your listening week.
Now for a selection of the audio-described television programmes starting Saturday 13th of June and ending Friday 20th of June, compiled by Sarah, read by Diane, and with Richard doing the techie stuff. There's a lot of World Cup football this week, which is included here, even though it is not audio-described. I do appreciate that not everyone will be interested in this. Let's start with Saturday. Unfortunately, there's slim pickings today. At 1:30 in the morning on BBC One, there's Match of the Day with live coverage of the opening match in Group D between host nation USA and Paraguay at the Los Angeles Stadium. If you're a fan of retro American comedy, there are endless episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond starting at 5 to 8 and ending at 11:20. This is followed by 3 episodes of The Simpsons. Over on BBC Two at 11:50, you can see the film The Importance of Being Earnest with Reese Witherspoon. On BBC Two at 12:30, there's James Martin's Islands to Highlands. This week, James takes a magical trip to the stunning Isle of Skye and is joined by Top Chef and Ultimate Scotsman Tony Singh. Over on BBC Two at 1:15, there's Homes Under the Hammer, short lease flats in London and Leicestershire. On ITV at 4:15, there's Capital's Summertime Ball, the UK's biggest summer party at Wembley Stadium, with A-list artists including Ray, Niall Horan, Calvin Harris, Fatboy Slim and more. Into evening viewing on Channel 4. At 8, there's Yorkshire by the Sea, this week in Burton Constable, or at 8:35 on BBC One, there's The Usual Dose of Casualty, with Dylan discovering the truth about Stevie and Maddie's relationship. This is followed on BBC One at 9:25 by another episode of the drama series 2 Weeks in August. At 10:30 on BBC One, there's more football, this time the opening match in Group C between Brazil and Morocco. Later on, there's a choice of films starting at 9 on Channel 4 with Where the Crawdads Sing. This popular book adaptation is about a feral child who is accused of murder in America's Deep South. This is followed at 11:20 p.m. by the Oscar-winning comedy drama Jojo Rabbit, about a young boy in crumbling Nazi Germany who has an imaginary friend called Adolf Hitler. Your third option is Taken 3 on ITV at 1:50. Now on to Sunday. There's early hours football on BBC One at 1:10 a.m. with coverage of the Group C match between Haiti and Scotland from Boston Stadium. At 11 on BBC One, there's Homes Under the Hammer, followed at 11:30 by Bargain Hunt. Your afternoon film is at 2:30 p.m. on ITV and is the classic Bond From Russia With Love, starring Sean Connery and Robert Shaw. Thankfully, there are more choices of programmes in the evening today. At 7:15 on BBC One, there's the second and final episode of the nature documentary Tiger Island, and at 9:15 on One, the penultimate episode of the drama Death Valley. Over on BBC Two, there are 3 hours of varied documentaries: Expedition Killer Whale at 6:15, Hidden Treasures of the National Trust at 7:15, and then Expedition with Steve Backshall at 8:15. On Channel 4, there's a new documentary, Free Nelson Mandela, which explores the extraordinary story of Nelson Mandela's journey from activist to revolutionary prisoner. In this first episode, Mandela is jailed for life in 1964 as activists and musicians rise against apartheid. If you fancy a film, the futuristic drama Children of Men, which explores a future where no more children are born, is on BBC Two at 10:45. Football closes play on BBC One with live coverage as Ivory Coast and Ecuador play their opening match in Group E at the Philadelphia Stadium. Before we move on to the rest of the week, here are the regular soaps and programmes which are on the same channel each day. Starting with the soaps, there are some changes this week due to the World Cup coverage. On Monday and Tuesday, it's EastEnders on BBC Two at 7:20, with Emmerdale at 8 and Corrie at 9 on ITV. On Wednesday and Thursday, it's just EastEnders on BBC One at 8:30. And on Friday, there's Emmerdale at 8, followed by Corrie at 8:30. In terms of regular programming on at the same time each day, BBC One have Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, followed by Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Each afternoon, we have Escape to the Country at 3, with the exception of Friday, when it starts at 2:45. On Monday, Tuesday and Friday, there's a new series, Travelling Auctioneers, at 4:30. And at 6:30 on BBC One each weekday is Great Continental Journeys, this time in Scandinavia. There's Tennis from Queens each afternoon, starting at 1 on BBC Two. This is not audio described, but may still be of interest to some. Also on BBC Two at 6:30 each weekday is Great Continental Journeys in Scandinavia. Similarly, ITV have live racing from Ascot from Tuesday to Friday at 1:30. Channel 4's regular programme, Car SOS, is at 12:10, Narrow Escapes is at 4, and Chateau DIY is at 5. Now on to Monday. In addition to the regular daytime and tea time programmes, this evening's football match is on BBC One at 7:30, with live coverage of the opening match in Group G between Belgium and Egypt at the Seattle Stadium. At 8 on Channel 4, Chris Packham investigates in Invasion of the Parakeets. Ring-necked parakeets are some of Britain's most divisive birds. Are they beautiful, charismatic newcomers, or are they an ecological menace to crops and native wildlife? This is followed at 9 o'clock by 24 Hours in A&E, when Sonny is rushed to Queens with multiple stab wounds and doctors are concerned about an 87-year-old woman who is coughing up blood. On BBC Two at 9, there's Brexit, A Very British Civil War, which is followed at 10 by another episode of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing. This new series begins with Paul and Bob taking a trip to North Uist in the Outer Hebrides to catch fresh sea trout. After the news on BBC One, we are given some insight into how models suffer widespread exploitation and coercion at the hands of their managers in OnlyFans Inside the Machine. This is followed at 11:55 by the film A Simple Favour. A small-town vlogger tries to uncover the truth about her best friend's disappearance. Now for Tuesday. Football dominates BBC One today with two matches, France v Senegal at 7:30 and Iraq v Norway at 10:45. For a rest from football, there's Digging for Britain with Alice Roberts on BBC Two at 8, followed by a new series at 9, Scam Amanda. This four-part docu-series follows mother and blogger Amanda Riley, whose story of a cancer diagnosis elicits sympathy and support, but upon investigation, things don't seem to add up. On Channel 4 at 8, it's Bake Off, The Professionals, followed by a new series of the drama series The Light in the Hall, Still Waters, at 9. Decades after being jailed for the 1995 murder of his cousin, Rhys Owen returns to his hometown as a local journalist stumbles across a long-buried secret. You can round off your evening viewing with 24 Hours in A&E, also on Channel 4. Now on to Wednesday. Portugal play against the Democratic Republic of Congo on BBC One at 5:30. The series Changing Ends continues at 7:30 on ITV. This is followed at 8 by England's first game against Croatia, also on ITV. For something non-football related, head over to BBC Two at 8 for the repair shop. This week, the team restore a children's truck built by their dad, a cherished Dutch doll, and a moth-eaten fez from Egypt. At 9 on BBC One, Death in Paradise continues, and over on Channel 4, at the same time, you can catch the second episode of the series, The Light in the Hall. Round your evening off with Night Copper, also on Channel 4 at 10. Now for Thursday. Unsurprisingly, there was more football. The Czech Republic play South Africa, with coverage starting on BBC One at 4:30. And Switzerland take on Bosnia-Herzegovina over on ITV at 7. Channel 4 has a full evening of programmes for you. At 8 p.m, George Clark's Beautiful Builds continues, this week with Michelle in Windsor, who has got stuck updating her undesirable bungalow. This is followed at 9 by 24 Hours in Police Custody, when a missing man is believed to have been murdered. Finally, at 10 on Channel 4, there's a new series, The Accused Beyond Reasonable Doubt, which follows individual fighting convictions that they believe to be a miscarriage of justice. There are a couple more options at 9. BBC One have the last episode of Reported Missing, when the police launch high-risk searches for two missing women. On BBC Two, Queen James explores the life, loves and relationships of James I, the monarch whose deep affections for handsome young men shaped both his personal and political reign. And finally, on to Friday. At 7:30 on BBC One, the USA take on Australia in a Group D match. Over on Channel 4 at 8, there's another episode of Our Farm Next Door, Amanda, Clive and the kids. This is followed at 9 p.m. by Celebrity Gogglebox and then First Dates, both also on Channel 4. BBC Two have the final episode in this series of Hidden Treasures of the National Trust, this week focusing on garden designer Gertrude Jekyll at Munstead Wood, one of the Trust's newest properties. This is followed by Season 7 finale of Inside Number 9. There's one late film on BBC One at 11:55, an action thriller called Roadhouse. A once-famed MMA fighter, now down on his luck, is offered a job as a bouncer at a Florida bar, but his arrival does not suit the plans of a local gangster. For die-hard football fans, there are basically matches throughout the night, with coverage starting on ITV at 10. Scotland play against Morocco with a kick-off at 11 p.m. Brazil are against Haiti at 1:30 a.m. and it's Turkey versus Paraguay at 4 a.m. We do hope that you'll find something of interest this week.
TNF Soundings.